We've been talking on Sunday nights for the past couple of weeks about what if Jesus were on earth today? What would he do? What kind of preacher would he be? How would he live his life? Well, we know that in many ways he would live his life much as he did when he was on earth. So many of the things wouldn't change. Of course, he would be as perfect as he was that first time around. But we want to talk about the things that he would do tonight. We talked first about the things that he wouldn't do. We talked about the fact that he wouldn't ignore those that were hurting, or children, or individuals, or sin and its consequences. But after talking about the things he wouldn't do, like ignoring those things, we talked about the things that he would be. And we talked about the fact that he would be committed to excellence, that he would be a servant, that he would be normal, that he would be persistent, that he would be the kind of person who stayed close to his source of strength in prayer. He would be prayerful. And that he would be one who watched his attitude about things. He would be very conscientious about those things. Sometimes those are things that we need to put into practice in our lives as well. But tonight we want to look at more of the practical side. The being things, those are things that have a practical side too. You do some of those things. If you're a prayerful person, then you pray. But here we want to look tonight at things more outwardly as opposed to inwardly. The things when you say, well, I'm going to be this kind of person, that's an inward look. And we want to look at the outward. What kind of actions would Jesus have? What would he do with his time? And we want to look at four things. One of these goes right along with what we discussed in our men's class. If Jesus were on earth today, he would recruit and develop leaders. We know that he would do that because that's what he did when he was here. He recruited 12 men, and he developed those men, and he spent 3 solid years of his life focused on trying to develop those 12 men to be the leaders of his church that he was going to build. He put a lot of effort and energy into them. He was with them day and night, day in and day out. He ate with them. He slept there where they slept. He walked where they walked. He was with them, and they were with him. They watched him, and he watched them. And they asked him questions, and he answered. And he asked them questions to see what answers they would give and what they were thinking. He explained things to them that he didn't explain to anybody else. He was developing leaders. And we were talking in our men's class tonight about leadership. Of course, that's the general topic that we focus on in our men's class. Because as men, God has given us the responsibility of being the leaders of the congregation. He didn't give that responsibility to the women. Now, there are women who are leaders in various things. They may be class teachers. They may be leaders among women. They may lead their families. Many women who are the heads of their household. But in the church, the men are given that responsibility to be leaders. And we've got to be like Jesus and work to develop leaders. When we think about it, he chose those 12. Notice he wasn't 100% successful. One of them was the devil. And there's going to be some that we try to reach out to, some that we try to work with, that are not going to do what they need. They're not going to be faithful. They're not going to do right. But we need to invest our time and energy so that we get the best results. What if Jesus, at the beginning of his ministry, when he chose those disciples, and he gathered all his disciples around, and he picked 12 out? Peter and Andrew, his brother, and James and John, the sons of Zebedee. And he picked Matthew and Bartholomew, and he picked Philip and James the Less, and the Judas Iscariot, and the Judas that was a Jew. And he picks these men, and he pulls them all in there, and he says, "All right, you guys are going to leave my church when I build it. next year I'll come back and check and see how you're doing. Can you imagine? How much do you suppose they would have grown over that next year if he had done that? Said, okay, you got it. You're my apostle. Now, y'all think about how you're going to lead the church, and I'll check back with next year. It wouldn't have worked, would it? He had to be with them. And in the same way, when elders look to develop younger men in the congregation to take their place or to fill their shoes or just to join their ranks at some point in the future, it doesn't do any good from once a year to say, hey, hope you're going to be an elder someday. Now, that's not to say that we don't encourage. When I see some of these young guys sometimes, hey, you're working on that next sermon? You thinking about what you're going to preach about next time? Them every single time I see them. Maybe I should say it more than I do. But we've got to encourage them verbally. But more than that, we've got to spend time with them. We've got to spend time with teaching them. One of the best memories that I have as a young teenager was the elders in our congregation had a Bible study with me about something that I was interested in. I had wanted to study the book of Hebrews. And I approached him about it. I really had a lot of questions about the book of Hebrews. Now, my dad was a preacher, okay? So, why didn't you ask your dad? Well, my dad taught me all the time. I wanted somebody else to teach me. I wanted to have some input from another man that could do that. We have questions. Jesus were on today, one of the things that he would most certainly do would be to find men of promise. And you notice when you read that list of those disciples that he chose, he did not choose the most eloquent, the best educated, the richest, the famous, the ones that were looked up to by society. That's not the ones he picked. He picked the ones that, like we talked about in our leadership class, the ones who were malleable, the ones who could be broken and trained. You see, if he'd have gone and tried to pick all the Pharisees, why, they already had their ideas about how things would be. And he would have been butting heads with them throughout the entire 3 years of his ministry, because he did butt heads with them throughout the 3 years of his ministry. Anytime he tried to teach them anything, they were cracking heads. But the 12 that he chose for were willing to teach him because they weren't know-it-alls. One of the first things in order for us to learn is to admit that we don't know it. So he would develop leaders. Secondly, if Jesus were on earth today, he would evangelize. Now, so many times as Christians, and the word Christian describes someone who is a follower of Christ, someone who is trying to be like Christ, and yet as Christians, we're not like him in this area. We come to church. We don't do any of the bad sins. And we've made excuses for the little sins that we do commit, but they're not the bad ones. But when it comes to actually doing something to spread the gospel, we sit back and say, well, that's what the preacher's for. Now, the preacher should evangelize. There's no doubt about that. as a certain function of his job, as his occupation. But if we're, it is a responsibility for all of us. We must evangelize. I shared at the end of our Fishers of Men course that we had back in the spring. I've shared the statistical probabilities that would be involved in bringing the gospel to Choctaw County. That if one person by themselves tried to do that, it would take them somewhere near 4,000 years to do it. For one person to sit down and study through lessons to every person in Choctaw County. It would take them 4,000 years to get that done. So the idea that one person evangelize the world is not realistic. What has to happen is the principle that Jesus taught the disciples. Look in Matthew chapter 28. In Matthew chapter 28, Jesus says he's about to go back to heaven, leaves the disciples with what we often refer to as the Great Commission. And even though each of the gospel accounts shares some information that Jesus gave before he left, this is probably the one that's the most popular for some reason. But he says to them in verse 19, and teach patience, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world. And what he says here is that after they've taught that person what they need to obey the gospel, it doesn't stop there. You then teach them how to be a teacher. That person's soul, if you'll allow the terminology, then you teach them how to become an evangelist. So one person isn't left to try the whole world. If the 12 apostles, even though there were 12, even and if you count Paul, 18 of them, after losing Judas, and replacing him with Matthias, and then here comes Paul along. He takes those 13. How long would it have been for them to preach the gospel to everybody, to study with everybody in the world? In their lifetime. But because of the fact that they didn't do that way, they taught somebody else and taught that person how to teach somebody else. And so then, instead of 13, you got dozens, and then hundreds, and then thousands, and on grows. And that's what God expects of us. We realize that it's not only important for us to share the gospel with others, but then to continue teaching them after they have become a Christian how to teach others also. Isn't that what Paul said to Timothy? The things that I've committed to you, you commit those things to someone else. You teach other faithful men who will be able to teach others also. That's the only way it will work. What if the 12 apostles, you know, we know the 12 apostles were the only ones who could pass on the miraculous gifts. What happened to the miraculous gifts? They died out of generation, didn't they? What if the 12 apostles had been the only ones who could teach somebody else the gospel? Would have died out after, just like the miraculous gift did. The gospel can't work that way. And it can't work that way today. We must continue. Someone taught us, and it is therefore our responsibility to learn how to teach someone else. But it's also our responsibility as we teach others to teach them how to teach others. It's very cruel. It would be very cruel of me to stand up here and say, you've got to share the gospel with somebody. but never tell you how to do it. That'd be mean, wouldn't it? What if God told us, you've got to please me in everything you do, but then never told us what he expected? That was the problem that the Greeks and Romans had with their mythology. They didn't know what their gods wanted from them. And every time something bad happened, they thought, well, I must have done something, but I don't know what. But the real God's not that way. He tells us what he wants and how it can be accomplished. Things that we need to learn about evangelism. Jesus, first of all, evangelized by himself living the life. He lived the life. He didn't expect others to do the things he was unwilling to do. But he lived the life perfectly. Measure up to that standard. But we need to be trying to measure up to it the best we can. But secondly, then, he actually taught Old Testament scripture to teach. He used stories and events from daily life to teach. And, of course, he had the added advantage of having the miracles that he could use. Well, we can still use those same miracles he used. We just can't do them. We have to refer to the scriptures where he used them. But he did by thought and by opening his mouth. He preached big sermons, the Sermon on the Mount. Like when he was teaching before the feeding of the 5,000. He was teaching 5,000 before he decided to stop to feed them. But then he also did it on an individual basis. He went to the woman at the well. He taught the woman caught in adultery. Notice he didn't try to cover everything with them in one sitting. But he let a little light shine into their darkened lives so that they could see the light. And we need to do the same. One of the reasons that we offer the Fishers of Men class, and that we're offering it again, is so that we can learn how. Because there are some ways that work and some ways that don't work. Going and taking your Bible and whacking somebody over the head with it and saying, you better go be baptized, is not going to work with very many folks. Might get you a lawsuit, might get you arrested for assault and battery, but it's not going to get very many folks baptized. We've got to look for the best ways to accomplish our goals and our tasks. The third thing we want to notice tonight is that if Jesus were on earth today, he would spend a lot of his time getting people to think about spiritual things. Now, we talked about that a little bit in our end class as well, that as Christians, we can't be just natural, physical, worldly-minded, do what comes natural to the human being kind of people. We have to be spiritually-minded. We have to think on spiritual things. And the same thing is true of what we need to encourage others to do. Jesus says, lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, Matthew 6:19-21. What was he telling people? Don't focus on this life. Look up. Think about spirit things. Think about the other world, the one that you can't see with your eyes, but that you know is there. People more, for lack of a better term, other world minded. He would get them to think on spiritual things. Think about heaven. Think about the future and eternity. How much time in a given day do you think about eternity? Do we ever think about it? Oh, I know. Maybe for a couple of minutes sometimes on Sunday, right? When we're singing a song about heaven, like we did this morning. Won't it be beautiful there? We sing tonight. So yeah, for a few minutes on a Sunday, we think about eternity. We think about heaven and think. But how much time in our daily lives do we spend planning for how to get there and working toward getting there? I know most of you know that back in the summer, we were planning to take a big trip that didn't get to happen. So we were planning for it. And we'd get on the computer, get on the internet, and find a hotel in San Diego, near the San Diego Zoo, where we could get reservations and find out which one's closest to the zoo and which one costs the least. And we, you know, over, I mean, we planned on that thing for several months, and we probably spent a good week's worth of work, 40 hours or more, planning a trip. That was going to be a trip that was going to last us 3 weeks. And we spent almost a week's worth of time planning, and we were working, trying to save money up so we could, but we were moving towards that goal. Now, some other things. Time and effort have we put into planning and making the arrangements? Have you got your reservation booked? You see, there won't be rival occupancies. Every suite in heaven is booked prior to arrival. You can't just show up and go, I was traveling by to stay. We have to plan for it. We have to live our life in order to get there. Jesus said in John 14:1-3, if I go to prepare a place for you, I'll come in where I am, you may be off. He's trying to get us to think about the future. I don't know, maybe some as we get older about that more. But I want to encourage the young people, you better start thinking about it now. Or you'll find that you have enough treasure to afford the trip. Recall the story, and it's just a story, and it's kind of a short. But the lady arrived at heaven's gate, and Peter says, well, I never knew it would be like this. Pearl and crystal and diamonds and gold. Whoa, look at this place. And Peter said, that's not yours. Let's walk from there. And they walked a little further, and they looked like some really, really nice. Now, they had columns out front, and they had marble ways. They weren't quite like those first mansions, but they were still ever seen on earth. And he said, and Peter said, three either, let's keep walking. And they walked on, and before long they got to some, those are nice brick houses, you know, the kind that you see in a neighborhood that would cost $250,000, $300,000 in some of the cities. You know, nice houses. But not $1 million mansions. Nice, that's nice. That's not true. So don't walk. Well, here's just kind of a plain house with vinyl siding. He said, well, you know, if I had that wouldn't be too bad. They start building. And finally, after as they go, the house is just working. And finally, they get down, and there's a cardboard just so that one's yours. She said, what? Yeah, well, what's that all those up? He said, we can only build your mansion with what you set up here. That's just a story. It's just a joke. But the matter is, Jesus don't pay up treasures in heaven. And what we is what we're going to get. And if we don't send anything there, there won't be anything for us when we don't send anything up there. We won't get there. The joke's a little facetious because of the fact that, you know, If you don't make, you won't make. Homeless folks living in cardboard boxes. Either you've got a mansion, you don't get in. But we've got to send some. And that's what Jesus spent a lot of time on this earth. And he would remind people that the world is not all it is. It's just the beginning. This is the pretest, the practice test, if you will. But then, we see also, and finally, if Jesus were on earth, he would give hope to people. This past 2008, something, to see how people got. They got excited about Barack Obama, and that excitement is why he won the election. People don't worry, they're not excited for you. Some people say, well, he won, he was black. No, I don't think so. He won because he had the best policy. I don't think that was it either. If you listened to speeches, if you read the things that he said, he spent a lot of time talking about the world that in the country was not feeling of hope. Now, I'm not sure some folks are feeling hope now than then, but that got people excited because he talked about the hope for the future. And he gave those people that hope. Even if it was temporarily, some people aren't as excited as they were, but not when he started, or a year ago, right after the election. That excitement did not hold over. Giving people something to hope for is sort of thing. If Jesus were here on earth, he would give them something to hope for. Now, he wouldn't be interested in giving people hope for political change, okay? Because about politics. In fact, this church could be about politics. He would give us hope for something more substantial. Give us hope that of what happened with politics. Regardless of what happened in the physical world, we lost the room to foreclosure, or had to move to another place to find a job, or regardless of those things, there's still something to hope for. That's real hope. Hope that can't be taken away. When a politician gets up there and says, hey, I'm going to make your life better, and we're going to be making more money next year than we are this year, and then if it doesn't happen, we get disillusioned with politicians. But Jesus promises us, follow him. If you love him, faithfully obey him, we go to heaven with him. That's hope. Remember the one that's caught in adultery in John chapter 8? What do you suppose she was feeling as she was brought before him? Now imagine the situation. You've been caught red-handed committing sin for the Jewish law was worthy of death. If you knew the humiliation and embarrassment of being half-naked because of the state in which you were found, if she was, she had a sheet wrapped around her. And she's brought here by a whole bunch of men and thrown down at the feet of another man. What do you suppose she's thinking? She didn't have a whole lot of hope at that. And then the men that have drug her out of heaven, what do you think, teacher? The law of Moses says that if we get somebody in the act of adultery, we're supposed to stone them to death. What should we do? know that these guys are ready to kill her. And they want to kill her. And she has no choice. And what's more, she probably realizes that the Old Testament law, even if she did somehow escape with her life, she would be shunned and an outcast, and not even, she'd never be considered a Jew again, ever be allowed to worship. She, can you imagine the thoughts that might be running through her head? But then Jesus, no, he didn't say you haven't sinned, don't worry about it. That's what a lot of preachers do. Oh, don't worry about it, you know, different times. But Jesus didn't do that. He didn't say that. What he did do was he said first to those men, you know what, if you've never committed a sin, we'll go ahead and throw a rock at her. You know, I believe if he tried that today, I know some church members would probably go ahead and throw a rock. They are just, they're that arrogant. I think they just. But those men were honest enough to admit they didn't have the right to put the stone. And so they all walked away. You imagine dropping their rocks on the ground and walking away. So then Jesus says, woman, well, where are your accusers? And she looked. And they're all gone, and she says, oh, there's not any, Lord. She never realized that he is the perfect one who stones and throw them at her. He could have put the death penalty back right then if he wanted to, because he was without sin. But even this, instead, he gives her hope for the future. He said, he didn't say you didn't do anything wrong. I don't condemn you either. And don't sin anymore. Don't go back to that life. Do something different. See, Jesus gives us that hope. We've all been in situations where we have sin in us. And Jesus could have condemned us right then, struck us with a lightning bolt. No more sin. That he gives hope for the future. We need to give that hope to other people. There are people wrapped in the sin of their lives. They are covered up in it, smothering in it, and they have no idea how to get out of it, or that there is possibility of getting out of it, because everybody else they know is all covered up in their sin too. I don't have any idea. You can get free of that. If Jesus were here on earth today, he would give hope to people. And if we're going to be like this, then we've got to give hope to people too. Doesn't mean we condone sin, but we let people know that there is forgiveness, that there can be life after. Made whole again. That doesn't mean that we won't ever face any consequences. Many times the sins may have consequences. The forgiveness of that sin does away with all the consequences. Some involved in illicit sexual relationships can very well be forgiven of that. But they may pick up a sexually transmitted disease like AIDS. The rest of their lives. Doesn't keep them from being forgiven of the sin, but there's still some consequences sometimes that continue on. They may wind up pregnant and have a child as a result of the sin that they committed. They can still be forgiven of it. They still have a child that they're going to have for the next 20 years or more. We have to think about that, but we have to give hope to people and remind them that Jesus can forgive and he does forgive. you're here, and as a Christian, you have not been doing what you should do as a Christian. See, you haven't been working on growth yourself. Maybe you haven't been working on helping others to become Christians. Maybe you haven't been doing anything to think about and plan for your life. Maybe you haven't been giving anybody else any hope. We need to be doing the things that Jesus would do to us, because we are His body. And as the church, is our head, and we are His body, and we should be doing what He would do. That's the body's role, to do what the head tells us. If you're here and you have need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you do so as we stand and as